And welcome back to the show. I'm Ryan Gatenby, and time for my next guest, who is an award-winning author. Brand new book is How Sex Changed the Internet and the Internet Changed Sex, an Unexpected History. And we're going to chat with Samantha Cole. Samantha, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was such a fun read. I found it informative, entertaining, and despite what the title would suggest, the book is not at all naughty.
So glad you found it that way.
Can you briefly share with us what the book is about? And I think we get an idea from the title, but that might, you know, people might not get the right idea.
Yeah, it's a long title. It's pretty descriptive. So this is kind of a wide-angle view of how sexuality and tech, specifically the internet, has evolved together over the last 30 years. So we're going back to, you know, the early days of the internet, actually more than 30 years. So we're going back to, you know, the 70s with ARPANET, where people were, you know, really starting to invent the internet itself, and the ways that sexuality and gender and the adult industry and things like that took a really huge role in building these systems and the things that we still use today.
Now, I first got on the internet would have been the early 90s, but it wasn't really the internet. It were these bulletin board systems where you were basically dialing onto someone else's computer, and it was very slow and usually text-based, but even then there were very, very low bitrate images circulating.
Yeah, bulletin board systems, definitely an early place where people were able to access porn online. Some of the fun ones, which I don't know if maybe you were on any of these, but they were, you know, called like SleazeNet, ThrobNet, Pleasure Dome, like these subscription-based bulletin boards that were made for trading images and in from like porn magazines.
Oh, interesting. No, I didn't visit any of those specific ones. It was basically like talking about music and video games and then, oh, yeah. by the way, check out this section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Now, this is interesting. We've talked about this on the show that, and you speak to this in the book, that a lot of technology we have today was either developed for, some of it came as a result of, the adult entertainment industry.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of what we use today, we take for granted that it was first developed and pioneered by people who were working in sex work and expressing their sexuality online. Things like browser cookies, user tracking, things like that were developed by online dating entrepreneurs and porn webmasters. They wanted to kind of keep track of people who visited their sites. They wanted to be able to do things like affiliate marketing, which I don't know if you remember this in the early internet, but you know, you had to go to a link directory to be able to see what you want to do on the internet. So it was before like Google.
Right.
So you could kind of click on a link and then that person would earn money from that click. And that's still a thing we do today on the internet, to make money through, you know, news articles and things like that. Things like the JPEG, like photos were developed from a photo of a Playboy centerfold. And that was the first standardized image for processing for decades. So it's a lot of these little kind of subtle ways where sexuality and sex work were part of, you know, developing and pioneering the early internet.
So a Playboy centerfold image was like the reference image for internet graphics?
Yeah, that's right. I don't know who brought in the Playboy that day, but they changed the course of history.
Now, I recall something from the early days, and I think this would have been the mid-90s that we don't have today, but I seem to recall there were certain sites before you could download anything, you had to actually like verify your age. I swear there was like an age check verification for some of these.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could be misremembering that. And by the way, right. this is theoretical. I didn't do any of this.
Yeah, of course not. not talking about us, but, you know, people did these things.
Right.
Early days, you had to kind of verify your age to get into a lot of these websites. And a lot of the people who were working in the adult industry, it was super important to them to kind of keep it all adults. They wanted to keep their content away from kids because at the time there was a lot of panic about, like, will kids be able to access this crazy internet world and
right.
what will they see and will it scar them for life? So the people making those websites were very cognizant of that and didn't want, you know, their stuff getting into the wrong hands.
And then at some point, I guess we just gave up because now it's like, are you sure you're 18? Yeah, why not? Click.
Yeah. yeah, you used to have to call for like bulletin board systems. You would call the administrator and say, you know, hi, this is me. Here's, you know, my credit card number.
Right.
And they would say, okay, you sound like you're not lying to me. I don't really know. It was pretty, you know, up to them. But, you know, now it's just like you can make up a age a lot of the times and just say that you're 18. But, yeah.
But you have something in the book I thought was very insightful. And in the early days of the internet, chat rooms, very popular, especially I remember the AOL, America Online chat rooms, were huge. And of course, there were sexual chat rooms. And you talk about how that opened people up to kind of explore the issues of gender and sexuality.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in a lot of these chat rooms, a lot of them were like role playing. So you would show up and you could play part of a game.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes it would be like you can make up whatever you want to be. So you could describe yourself as whatever gender, whatever appearance, you know, whatever body type, whatever you want to be, you know, whatever species a lot of the times. So, yeah, it gave people an outlet to kind of say, what would it be like to embody something completely different that I'm not in real life? In real life, I'm, you know, I'm working a desk job 9 to 5 and I'm, you know, things are kind of boring. But like online, I can be whatever I want. I can express myself however I want, which I think was really, you know, a beautiful part of the early internet. And people still do that on the internet today. A legacy that definitely is still thriving. So, yeah, I think it's one way that, you know, the internet definitely changed and broadened our sexualities and our identities.
Well, and maybe because the internet world was much smaller then and most people were on dial-up. And yes, there were politicians losing their minds back then, most of them having never been on the internet, about some of the content that could be on there. Now it just seems like for all the progress we've made, as you talk about exploring sexuality and positivity, there are politicians and billionaires that are kind of using, as you say, kind of weaponizing internet safety.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, at the same time, we have this huge like ability to express ourselves online. And then you have this force from lobbyists who don't want any sexuality or porn on the internet. And they are trying to censor that and stifle that, which I think is really unfortunate. And it's really damaging to a lot of people's, you know, livelihoods. People have been using the internet for sex work for a really long time. You know, now you have a lot of groups that say that's exploitation or that, you know, trafficking and things like that. And, you know, lobbyists and politicians take that up as like their special cause and they, you know, kind of fight these things, these evils online. And it's a much more nuanced problem than that. It's much more, you know, it's not black and white. This is bad. This is good. It's, you know, it's kind of messing with people's ability to do a job. It's also messing with our ability to express ourselves online as we want to. So, yeah, it's going to be a really big issue going forward. We're seeing it now, and it's going to get more and more intense, I think, in the future.
Well, it's interesting talking about internet safety, and I know there's pluses and minuses, but it seems for, you know, the online sex work industry and just sex workers in general, I would think the internet has made things a little safer and that you might have more information about somebody than, you know, just a sketchy unknown person you're possibly meeting up with.
Yeah. I mean, the issues of safety are real. You know, it's been going on since we were early days on the internet talking about like stranger danger and things like that. These are all real issues, and they're definitely ones that, you know, like we talked about before, like people who are making the content that, you know, made for adults, they don't want to kind of expose kids to this stuff. And they're the ones working on, you know, the cutting edge technology still, you know, they were back in the day and they still are now. To kind of do more of that, you know, more secure age verification and safety practices and things like that. So, I think to look to the adult industry for these safety issues, I think would be a really smart move for anyone who's concerned about, you know, keeping kids safe and things like that.
The book is How Sex Changed the Internet and the Internet Changed Sex, An Unexpected History. It is now available where books are sold. The author is my guest, Samantha Cole. And Samantha, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. Wake up.
And welcome back to the show. I'm Ryan Gatenby, and time to talk to my next guest, who is a star astrologer, founder of the popular Twitter page at Scorpio Mystique, and founder of the popular platform and app Know the Zodiac. Brand new book is called Signs and Skymates, The Ultimate Guide to Astrological Compatibility. And we are going to visit with Dulce Villa Trenu. And good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How are you? How are things going where you are?
It's going great. It's been a wonderful launch week. Yesterday I had a book signing in Williamsburg.
Oh, nice.
So I'm filled with gratitude.
Can you share with us briefly what the book is about?
Absolutely. So it's an in-depth approach to astrological compatibility, because as an astrologer, one of my most common questions from clients is, who am I compatible with? And they tend to speak in a more general sense of saying things like, I'm a Gemini, my crush is a Pisces, can we make it work? And my book dispels myths and stereotypes about the zodiac signs by encouraging people to take a whole chart approach to get to know their entire natal chart and figure out their compatibility with their own self first, and then get to know how they can really connect deeply with others.
Now, how did you learn and develop deeper knowledge of that? Because you're right, I will just hear like, oh, well, you know, July 14th, you're a Cancer, you're going to be crabby and moody. And I'm like, that's partially true, but that's not...
Exactly.
That's not entirely who someone is.
Exactly. And it actually came from my own upbringing. My parents, when I was born, they were able to choose my date of birth approximately because my mom had me by C-section, and my dad is a Taurus. His older sister is a Scorpio, and her birthday is October 24th. That was the day I was supposed to be born. But a few days before my due date, my dad and his sister got in a disagreement, and he told the doctor and my mom, let's change my date to the 23rd. I still made the cut as a Scorpio, but growing up as a little 8-9-year-old, my parents would sometimes tell me at the dinner table, be careful, the way you're acting right now is very Scorpio-like, you're being very stubborn. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what? And so there wasn't Google at the time, there was Ask Jeeves. And I was at AskJeeves.com looking up what it meant to be a Scorpio. And that's when I saw, first, that Scorpios are the most misunderstood sign of the zodiac. And second, I'm not just a Scorpio. I have a moon in Virgo, a Mars in Cancer, a Venus in Sagittarius. And I just became so intrigued with studying my own chart and studying the chart of others. And the rest was history.
Wow, I got an Ask Jeeves reference today. I hadn't thought about that website in, what, 15, 20 years. But yeah, wow, it's hard to imagine a world pre-Google. But so anyway, yeah, and people talk to you about astrology, about trying to find your perfect match, your perfect romantic partner. But you, in your book, you're talking there's far-reaching implications and ways to study astrology. We're talking about business opportunities, friendships. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. When you know the different placements in your chart, you start to see how certain planetary placements can help you in different realms of life. So the moon represents your emotional connections, and the sign that it's in may help you figure out the type of people who can bring you emotional fulfillment. So you could be a Cancer with a moon in Sagittarius, which would mean you were drawn to Sagittarius-like people and experiences, travel, higher education, philosophy. Mercury represents communication, so that's great for coworkers and business partnerships, studying what your Mercury placement is. And Venus is the planet that most has to do with romance and intimacy, but also with friendships. So on the Know the Zodiac site, if you don't know your birth chart, there's a free birth chart calculator, and that's the first step to figuring out your placements. And from there, you have a whole range of experiences within yourself and within others to explore, and you should take your time so you're not overwhelmed.
When you're talking about the moon and how that's a part of everyone's lives, and you'll hear, you know, the cliche, oh my gosh, I it must be a full moon, I feel crazy today. Is there anything to that?
Absolutely. The term lunatic comes from Luna, and that's because when the moon is full, people had noticed that people are more energized and passionate, and that's
direct correlation to full moon energy. But at the same time, when we think about how the ocean's tides are more strong and passionate when there's a full moon, and when there's a new moon, it's a great time for farmers to plant seeds. The soil is more fertile. And that's the same thing with our own intentions. I recommend that people plan their lives based on the cycles of the moon. When there's a new moon, it's a powerful time to set intentions for the next 6 months based on the sign that the new moon is in. And when there's a full moon, like there was recently a full moon in Gemini, the final full moon of the year took place December 7th, it's a great time in the 4 days before the full moon and the 4 days after to release what you've outgrown and let things go, even if it's slightly painful. So when you align yourself with the cycles of the moon, you remember that life is filled with transition and you are less distraught by what might be happening because you know there's another chance to begin again.
And then every full moon each month, depending on the sign it's in, that represents something different?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Gemini full moon was more about communication. So it's interesting that my book came out right around the full moon and it really has made waves. And then the next full moon next month will be in Cancer at the beginning of January. And that's all about family. What are some unhealthy dynamics in our family dynamics that we might want to release at the beginning of 2023? We might feel very sensitive as a collective at the beginning of January, and then we'll be like, oh yeah, there's a Cancer full moon, and Cancer is literally ruled by the moon, so let us cry. Let's let ourselves feel the effects of the moon without fighting it.
I remember at some point, and maybe it was the 80s or 90s, I know I was young, and there was talk of changing the name of Cancer to Moon Children to better reflect that. I don't know why that ever came about. I don't know if it's because it was more moon ruled or people just didn't like hearing Cancer.
Yes, that's a good point. This is the second time I've heard this reflection about Cancer, and I do believe in the law of attraction. So I would be totally okay with Moon Children instead of Cancer. We should bring that back.
I don't know. I don't think maybe people thought it was too hippie, but I'm totally on board with like Children of the Moon. That sounds like a 70s rock band.
Literally, and it's a very accurate depiction of Cancer. Cancer is very intuitively aligned due to the fact that the moon is their ruler, and people should view Cancer's sensitivity as a strength instead of a weakness.
And then in addition to your new book, which by the way is Signs and Skymates, it's available now wherever books are sold, you have a very popular app, Know the Zodiac. How can we use those together?
So learning about astrology is great with your natal chart, but when you have a proficient astrologer, and I'm definitely plugging myself,
of course,
you can read really in-depth horoscopes based on your rising sign. So step one is to go to knowthezodiac.com, calculate your birth chart, and figure out what your rising sign is. And the second step would be to read your horoscopes on the Know the Zodiac app based on your rising sign first. But please keep in mind that rising sign can only be calculated if you know your exact time of birth. So if you don't, look at your birth certificate or ask your parents or guardians. And after you've read for your rising sign, then comes your sun sign. Too often people just read their sun sign horoscopes, but my app specifies that rising horoscopes are the most in-depth and accurate ones, and then comes the sun. And I also have Instagram pages for all the signs, so Know Aries all the way through Know Pisces, K-N-O-W, and then your sign's name.
I have got to explore that, and I do know my time of birth because my mom will call me every year. And like, it's 7:27. I was in a lot of pain right now because of you. Like, well, thank you. And now I'm here.
That's beautiful. Your sun sign is Cancer?
Yes.
Wonderful. So that's interesting that you brought up your mom. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And the new book is Signs and Skymates, The Ultimate Guide to Astrological Compatibility. Once again, it is now available where books are sold. The author is my guest, Osevia Trenu, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Ryan. We'll be right back.